This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm Chris Plunkett, like it says right there in the little promo. I'm the host of Disaster Recovery Hour every Tuesday between 1 and 2 here at WVNJ AM 1160, The Voice. Like I said, being broadcasted out of Oakland, New Jersey, but reaching all the way out to the island up in Westchester and a lot of other areas in the metropolitan area. The show is about reporting about disasters and mitigating disasters. And in this world of ours now, disasters come in many flavors and colors. There's the natural property disasters of the craziness that's happening in Japan right now. And a couple of weeks ago in our own area with the flooding, with the Ramapo and the Passaic, and I got heavily involved in that. I do own my own business. It's CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. We do emergency services on property, and that encompasses fires and floods and smoke damage and some others, even mold and repair work. But, you know, I'm doing the show, and I do the show because I feel like it's like a public service, because you want to meet me personally. You don't want to meet me professionally. And I like to try to give out tips, even when I visit you at your place of business or your home. You know, when I spend a lot of time putting people at ease, because the bottom line is you're a bit whacked out. I mean, you're upset that you had a fire, you had a flood, you know, you have damaged this and damaged that, or your business is no longer producing business. And I get called in by numerous types of agencies, whether they're insurance or it's the city of New York, it's a property manager. So for me, is I want to control the scene, but I'll get into that a little in depth later on. Let me just give you what the show, the meat of the show, the premise of the show is really about. It's what the disasters and the emergencies happen. I like to give you the tools and the tips of the trade, if you will, on how to hedge off these disasters when they happen, prevent them fully, or when you do have them, what are the things that you can do to help yourself before a guy like myself? And there's a lot of good guys out there, a lot of other businesses that do just what I do, and there's some good ones, some bad ones, and just like everything in life. In the upcoming shows, we'll be talking about the insurance end of it, and it gets very complicated. People get confused. There's the verbiage inside these policies can be convoluted, if you will. And I help you navigate through those treacherous waters, if you will. Listen, the insurance company's not out to hurt you. It's just that there's some legalese that you need to know. We'll also be talking. I'll be bringing as guests and talking through Skypes or through the phone first responders. And then also I have different specialists. Some are behind the scenes that you don't think are romantic. They're not out there putting out fires. But you know what? You have fine artwork, or you have area rugs or things, or your clothing. I have a buddy of mine, Dave Fenyahazi, owns Fabric Renewal. He's great. He owns a business here in Jersey, New York, and Westchester. Does a fantastic job. Cares, and that's one of the things that you'll know in the upcoming weeks, in the upcoming months, is the people that I come on have the same passion for this business as I do. And it's about really helping you guys out. Grant you, it's a dirty, slimy, busy business, as in, you know, it can get 2 o'clock in the morning, you have fires or you have floods and you're displaced. But you know what? I think you want to see somebody who's feeling the empathy for you and wants to put you in the right direction, finding a place to stay or contacting the Red Cross. I'll have Red Cross officials on. I formulated a very good relationship with Charles Maltaby from the Red Cross. He's up here in the Bergen and Sussex County area. He'll come on to the show, and we'll talk about some of the things that they do. Because there's a thing about the Red Cross a lot of people don't know. It's not about donuts and coffee. We'll talk about some of the first responders, and some of those first responders that I'll bring on also have another hat that they wear, and they're in business for themselves. One of them is a very good friend of mine. He's a captain in the fire department. He's also a good friend. Like I said, his name is Dan O'Brien. He is the man with the juice. He's got generators, and yes, I am plugging him, but on the whole, he's the same kind of guy I am. We're doing a job, but however, we understand the position that you're in. I mean, I've had two floods in my life at my house, and my wife was not pleased, considering I didn't address the problem for about a week because I was addressing everybody else's problems. But that's all right. I still slept in the bed. So with that, we also talk about now that's a regional thing. We also talk on an international with the social media, which has been I was kind of leery about Twitter and Facebook, but it's really opened my eyes to a lot of things around the world. And there's a phrase my brother John uses all the time, that the world is flat, and it really is. I didn't get it at the beginning, but it really is. I mean, the communication highway is so quick, and the responses by governments and countries, it's opened my eyes through this social media of other horrific disasters. And Japan's one. We're gonna speak with somebody. I think we're gonna have somebody on next week about that. Somebody who has family back there, and they've been in contact. We're still waiting on that response from them, but hopefully in a positive manner we can get them on the show. Again, stay on the international side. I became friends with a couple people who went down to Haiti after the earthquake. And he's going to be one of them is going to be my guest today, later on in the show. And the Haiti thing hits home for us because, listen, they're so close to the United States, okay? There's a very large Haitian population in the metropolitan area. And it goes back to that the world is flat routine. You just can't let people and countries die on the vine. You need assistance. You have to. You just can't. You know, the part of the economic pie, whether a small piece or a large piece, you know, I'm not a political guy, so, or an economic guy, but whatever, but you just can't let them die. Like I say, and that's the same thing with the Japanese. Here's they were the number one prepared country on the planet, and you know what? When Mother Nature gets upset, you're not going to be able to control her. You do all you want. Look at Katrina. I don't care. The city could have been evacuated; it still was going to get crushed. So, very enthusiastic that I get out on a daily basis, whatever time of day it is, to come out and assist after a disaster happens. And hence the reason the show is called Disaster Recovery Hour. And so we're about 7 minutes after the hour. My guest is going to be calling in a few minutes. When I was talking about the social media, I also, let me pump this out to you. There's twitter.com/DRH radio. That's the Twitter page. And if you want to go on there, comment, Bill can see it, live as we speak, as I'm speaking, I should say. And, there's also the phone number. It's 1-800-962-1160. You know, that will come up on the board and Dave will handle that and see if there's an applicable question for me, if I can help you out. I've been in the business, this disaster business for, 10 years prior to that. It was more on the running of crews of janitorial and construction sites and things like that. And the unfortunate thing, I found this business that I'm very much, I have a lot of passion for on an unfortunate standpoint. I was hired by a very large emergency service company in New York City a week before 9/11. And I spent downtown for 6.5 months downtown. And the city for me is, there's a lot of action over there. It's you have a lot of property issues along with our human being issues. There's plenty of vandalism scenes and things like that. They're not often, but I'm pretty fluid in those scenes. Like I was talking about different colors and different types of disasters, we also, I'm going to talk about we have health problems in this issue. And I was reading an article a couple of months ago about people who are able to get out when a disaster is coming, whether they need to flee the city or flee or get out of a building. It's, you know, a lot of people, there is a drain on the first responders because of people who are not physically fit to get out of a building, or to leave the scene, or to drive. And it's kind of an unforeseen percentage of people. I know they had that problem with some of the hospitals down in Katrina. A buddy of mine went down there. I did not go down there. I spent the year before 5 months, 6 months away from my family with the hurricanes in Florida. So my wife was definitely going to kick me out permanently if I didn't come, if I did go down to Katrina. But regarding the health, it's, you know, we have... You know, I'm not going to say, we're just going to talk about health in general. And I think it's very applicable to a disaster in our country. And you see it on the nightly news about, where our children are going and the diabetes and so on and so forth. So I have a good friend of Dr. Archie Roberts. I'll have him on the show probably next month or maybe the month after and talk about that. Again, it's applicable disaster that's happening in our country. And we also have, everybody knows, two out of three people, out of 10 people are unemployed or going in and out of employment. We have financial disasters in this country that's happening on a daily basis. And a good friend of mine also that I met through this disaster community that I'm now belong to is Bart Terulli. He's a Meriprise financial consultant. And he's got some stuff that, you know, he's not peddling these services or these financial avenues to say, hey, listen, come get me. I'm gonna, you know, it's gonna cost you X amount of dollars. The guy's got, he's got good advice, and again, he's passionate about his job. So we're gonna go to a commercial break, and when we get back, we're gonna talk to a good friend of mine, Paul Wagner. He's Skyping in on the telephone. He's been heavily entrenched in Haiti. He actually made some news. Well, you know what? How about we do this? Let's go to the break. We come back, and we'll lock and load with him. Okay, thanks. Hey, how you doing? It's Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Hey, well, you got the numbers, actually, the office is two numbers for the office. 201-483-8953. That is 201-483-8953. You know, go to my website, cppems.com. EMS.com. The numbers are on there. It's also, there's a New York City number for 212-920-8798. Like I said, we're going to have Paul Wagner. He's on the line. He's also on the line with Nancy Murdoch. Nancy is the social media guru for Paul. You know, it's been a great thing. It's because why Paul is in the field doing really the Lord's work, and that is truly what it is, helping the orphanages and the rubble down in Haiti. Nancy is back here making sure the people know that this is still going on, and people still need assistance. And hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys, what's cooking? Paul, we'll start. So let's get the listeners involved. I already obviously I know, but what Paul did was, after the earthquake happened in January 12th of last year, he owned a very successful construction company up in the New England area, and I guess it's maybe an epiphany. I don't know. But a calling. It's like, you know, I got to get down there. I mean, I have expertise in building and structuring and things like that, but also, you know, I'm a hands-on guy, and this is what Paul told me many months ago. Paul, why don't you tell them? Why don't you bring him a little? Give him a little BG on how the whole thing started for you.
Well, I was sitting in my kitchen having dinner on the 12th and seeing the news come over about the earthquake, and decided that evening that I was going to get started. I wanted to go down and, you know, get involved, and kind of got the hooks in me with all the, you know, media coverage. So I started shutting down the work that I had going on out on Nantucket, getting my vaccinations and meds to try to stay healthy while I was down there, and within couple weeks I was on the ground Dominican Republic getting on a bus because planes weren't flying in commercially yet to Port-au-Prince, and just where I was camped out, I ended up connecting with a medical team from a hospital there near where I was staying and started working with them. Got involved with a couple orphanages and met a friend down there and started working, you know, on doing our own thing. We had medical supplies going back and forth to different hospitals, clinics, and moving people around, and took off from there.
Now if listeners don't know, what happens is with these, the, you know, countrywide disasters, NGOs, non-government organizations like the Red Cross and like some of your larger ones, but Paul had teamed up with some other guys, and you know, they're more hands-on. There was a lot of red tape, I understand, through trying to contact even the NGOs right in your face, but not to name any, but just that there was so much chaos that he was able to keep you more. It's almost like a reconnaissance team. You know, keep it small. You get a lot more production out of it that way. And that's what you guys. That's how you. What between the docs and the other guys that you worked with. And you know, you became the guy in the field. What you told me a long time ago, called the fixer. Explain what the fixer does.
Well, we had a lot of contacts within other organizations that got, you know, loads of supplies in. That either you know, you have the red tape where the, you know, the bigger organizations that are running these hospitals, you know, keeping stuff moving through there. They can't even get to their own supplies at times, or have no idea what it is. So you get a phone call, and it'd be anything from needing oxygen to, you know, wanting to get their hands on, you know, surgical material, different tools to, you know, keep the surgeries going throughout the day. And they, you know, have a couple hours before they're going to run out and shut down, just give a phone call, and, you know, we either have it in stock or know where to get it, and can kind of, you know, move around and not have to necessarily do all the paperwork and get signatures and, you know, right, hours or days to move things around and get them what they need.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
You know, the right people.
Yeah,
I mean, because... the right places to go.
Yeah, you, because when we were, we've been talking for so long now, but, I mean, a lot of people came down, you know, to, and, you know, the reason we're talking about Haiti again, because we, you know, Haiti's back in the paper, not for a good reason, because it's, the Japanese had their earthquake and a tsunami. Thank God, Haiti didn't have a tsunami. Forget about it. But it is getting some more, you know, you see some more traction in the papers now, which is, you know, again, it's an unfortunate good circumstance, and I don't know if I'm properly classifying it at, but, and that's the reason, you know, Paul and I met several months ago, and again, it was through this social media of Twitter and, you know, being in that world of disasters, and they, you know, Paul and some of his associates contacted me, and we formed a relationship, which led into so many other things. And I said at the beginning of the show, it's really opened my eyes to, you know, what's, you know, we have homegrown problems, and I'm all for that, you know. You know, I'm taking care of my backyard first, but we also have this, you know, the world's flat, you know, this responsibility to help thy neighbor. And it's kind of the dynamic is, you know, you do, you don't take care of at home, don't take care, you know, go spend money and resources at another country, but it's really, it's so small now. And some of the stories that you were telling me, you know, over the years, or I should say over the months, were you know, made national news. And we'll talk about that later. What I want to talk about is, you know, you guys were doing the field work, but in order to, listen, let's call the bottom line is, you still need to raise money because you're trying to help these people. Now, you can't be raising money and in the field at the same time. So that's how we introduce, right, with your social guru right there, right?
Nancy.
No, I know Nancy. No, I was just I'm trying to give you like a cool tag.
Oh, okay,
you
okay.
Know, you know, it's radio. I'm trying to, you
I'll
know.
I'll take what I can get.
I'm shooting for some good emails or whatever. But Nance, so how did tell me your role? I mean, obviously I know. Tell the listeners how that comes to play.
Well, I mean, we talked about it on the first show, but I read the article in Men's Journal that was written about MMRC in October of 2010, and I was just so completely moved about what they were able to do on such a shoestring budget. And I had just gotten started in social media myself, so the first thing I did was check their social media strategy, their website, the fluidity between their Facebook and their blog and their Twitter account, and they had some of the pieces there, but they weren't all connecting. So I contacted the guys, and I offered my services. I thought that it would be for 2 or 3 weeks, but, you know, I saw what they were doing at the orphanages especially, and I've just stuck around. It's become a really important project to me. In terms of raising money, it's just bringing awareness. Like you said, the earth is flat. We're all connected. Just a lot of people don't know what's going on down there and what even, you know, $10 can make a difference to feed a child or help a child get through school, and all the money adds up. So we use Twitter, we use Facebook, and we use our blog, which has a donate button on it, mmrchaiti.org. And, you know, the donations come in. We also have a large corporate sponsor, which has just been gracious, which is Garden Fresh Salsa. CEO Jack Aronson has just been a phenomenal support to us.
He actually came down. He was on some of that CNN footage, right, Paul? He was in the
yeah, background. He was in Haiti, and yeah. All of the CNN footage that you saw when Paul was in prison was taken by Garden Fresh Salsa.
Yeah, so this is, you know, through what we call like a little reset. This is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday now between 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Some good drive time, and if you're sitting at your office, sitting at home, the computer comes in dynamite. You can check us on the computer. It's WVNJ AM 1160. It's called The Voice. LP, Paul, let's since Nancy brought up prison, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to think, you know, we're calling Paul from a cell block. Paul, why don't you give the listeners what happened with there and tie in with Mr. Anderson Cooper?
Well, I was working at a hospital in February, right after the earthquake of 2010, and during that time doing logistics and, you know, helping them out with the movement of medical teams coming to them from the airport around the hospital, making sure people were where they needed to be, helping organize the Haitian volunteers that were there translating and doing different jobs, keeping the hospital functioning. And during that time, we had a couple earthquakes. The hospital ended up evacuating patients and staff. It was probably 1:30 in the morning that there was a child come in that American doctors started working on. He ended up passing away. There was some confusion there with the father on, he didn't feel as the child was, dead. He thought he was still alive. A couple days went by. He never wanted to pick him up for a funeral. And the hospital had incinerated the child. The father ended up feeling like the baby was still alive, when he had some different paperwork done up by a judge. There was a suspicion or summons for questioning on kidnapping, and one thing led to another. It was taken care of the first week or so of March by a lawyer in 2010, and the 12th of December I ran into the father downtown having lunch, and he had I believe it was a Xerox copy of the original summons from the court case that had already been handled, and convinced a couple cops that it was a legitimate piece of paper. They took me up to the local jail there where the summons was served from, and held me for a couple days between the jails. Things got drug out for about 18 days. I was moved into the penitentiary, and thank God for running into Nancy, because she ended up, between her and a couple of the volunteers, a ton of the volunteers that we had worked with in Haiti that we had gotten to know, and people that, had no idea, we just heard stories, all got together and gathered more and more people and got the word out there. I'm not sure how Anderson Cooper came in.
Yeah, I know.
There was so much media. I've only watched like two videos from all of that.
Yeah, that was
not my thing.
Yeah, no. Exactly. It's almost a blessing we had Nancy to kind of navigate through all that stuff, because Anderson was the story goes with, besides just to add on to Paul, that Paul actually turned the baby into a zombie. So, and that's not to laugh or besmirch, but towards the Haitian, it's actually a religion. Voodoo is a religion and wildly respected down there. Let's go to a station break. Paul, I want to know and Nance what we're doing today, tomorrow, in the next couple of months, probably for more a couple of years. And I want to tie a little bit of that into, because I know Paul and I were talking about yesterday, some of the people that were down there are now over in Japan, if you guys have had any intel or communication with that. So let's go to a break and be right back.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
Thank you.
Welcome back. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Like I said, every Tuesday for here into the future, between 1 and 2, talk about disasters. And we got Paul and Nancy on the line, the guru. But
never going to live that down.
Yeah, no, you won't. You won't. I mean, because you know what, Nance, we were talking yesterday about this, the Twitter and the Facebook. I think it's just frightening. It's just frightening for me. So thank God I have the people who are assisting me with that. Do have a quick comment from the comments page. It says, welcome back, LP. Glad to hear your feedback on the ground. Best wishes. Continue the good work from Sherry. That's cool. I got, you know what, maybe we'll just take a look at this. Here's a question from this guy, Kurt. Thanks, Kurt. It says, has been any decline in the NGO/volunteer activity since Paul's unfortunate detainment? What's your feeling on that, Paul? Think people have shied away from that?
From what I hear, there's definitely been, you know, people, they've canceled their flights and changed their mind about going down. There's no doubt that, I don't know if it's all due to my thing, you know, just the fact that it's not as a popular topic anymore to a lot of people. But, you know, like you said about the Japan earthquake, you know, kind of got the attention back on it a little bit. But I get phone calls from people, emails, and, you know, asking what my thoughts are on going back and, you know, if people should still go down there and volunteer. I'd have to say so. It's just a matter of time. And, you know, I'll be back down there. I'm itching to, you know, be back on the ground and just keeping things going from the States and, you know, keeping junior volunteers going down, people that have worked with us before. You know, we have different groups like Susan, Ron Donovan, Laura Brown, Yvette, all these people go down. They do follow-up checkups with our orphanages, keep you know, everything fresh, what needs to be done. What's getting done, you know, what's been taken care of, and so on.
No.
So, I'd say, you know, people should go back. It was a pretty big mistake, and it got cleaned up. You know, you just got to remember that Haiti things, you know, move a little slower than the United States. But, it, you know, all in all, at the end of the day, it was taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of the issue, it shed some light on that with the Haitian government. And I don't believe they would make the same mistake, you know, over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
They've definitely figured things out, and it was taken care of. So.
Yeah, yeah. One of the stories that Paul told me a couple months ago was a kid who came down there, wanted to volunteer, you know, good-hearted person. But one of the things that people don't realize that if you're not prepared to be in country, you become collateral damage. And you guys were telling me about a story, but the kid was, you know, within a day and a half, he was homeless, he had no food, and you guys basically had to take him in and get him squared away and ship him back out of the country because he was a drag on, you know, he was a broken asset, if you will, right?
We've met a couple people down there that weren't quite ready for what they got into. So it happens, though. You know, sometimes it's a little overwhelming for people, but... you know, you just got to do the best you can and hope you're prepared for it. And definitely before you leave home, you kind of want to be as sure as possible.
Yeah. Hey, Nance, now, NGO-wise, you're with the social media. Do you have contact with the other guys, you know, for, you know, Paul services? Like I said, I mean, they became a hot commodity because they were making it happen. There was a valuable resource because of the lack of red tape, and going from point A to point B was a straight line. They didn't have to zigzag as much as the rest.
Yeah, I know what you're asking. During the cholera outbreak, the severity of it, we were actually using Twitter as a logistics tool. People were asking for help on Twitter, and we were responding, and eventually, another form of social media, the Google group, came from Dr. Jim Wilson of the Haiti Epidemic Advisory System, and it took over that sort of immediate supply and demand for cholera. But no, we haven't had as much with that. We're still in touch with many organizations. We all work together to help with the orphanages and kind of back each other up. Leslie Telto from Do Your Part. Paul mentioned Susan and Ron Donovan, and of course Fred Joseph from Help Us Save Us. 50 of our orphans will be going. going to his summer camp. And yeah, Twitter is just another form of communication. It's a tool. It's very much like SMS text, but people can watch your conversation that you're having with other people. You can jump in and join that conversation. So it is still going on. We're still using Twitter as a powerful tool. We're spreading our links, our updates, our blog posts, our photos, but we're not using it so much as emergency 911 system,
right,
not anymore.
So for the future, Paul, what's happening? What are we looking for, and what can we be on the lookout, and how some of the listeners and Twitter land and Facebook land, how they can donate, whether it's resources or dollars, whichever they can afford. What are the plans for the next this next 6 months? Because I'm sure you don't stretch it out for years. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you do. But I would imagine just the navigation down there is still difficult. So I guess it's little taking baby steps to get to the end result. Correct?
Yeah. Well, since I've been in the States, I've been coordinating with different people. I've got contacts that have groups like a friend of mine, Alan Stats, works for Arrow Bridge. He's helped with storing a lot of supplies in Florida to head down to Haiti through an airline that he's associated with. We have, transportation by cargo container on boats through him and a Haitian friend in country there. Mark, we've been gathering some supplies through Danny McAtee over in McAtee over in Oakland, California. He's a paramedic there. Getting all this ready for shipment into Haiti. We have reconstruction plans and just upgrade to do with a couple of the orphanages we work with. And, you know, we still continue to help get supplies to some of the clinics. We have a nurse that's getting ready to go down and work with Megan Coffey again for a while. Jeannie, she's amazing. She spent, I don't know, probably close to 7 months now in Haiti and is looking to go back from 4 to 6. She's got a fundraiser she's doing on the 9th and the 12th to try to get some money together to be able to, food and supplies while she's in country. Pay
yeah,
for
we got a
the
couple
place
of...
she'll be pitching her tent.
This past Sunday there was a follow-up article on a couple of doctors from our area, Dr. Dave Butler and Alan Gertzman. I was talking to you about it yesterday. The hospital, I'm not going to pronounce it right. What did I say? The hospital, Sacre Coeur.
Oh, Sacre Coeur.
That's up in the foothills. You said somewhere.
I believe we were talking about the Malot area.
Oh, okay.
Cap Asian Malot, north. Just directly north of Port-au-Prince.
Yeah, so they just went down for a couple of weeks, and there's your friend Kendra. He is still doing his stuff. Nance, now when Paul's doing this, it's still up and people can go to what are the sites are the best for the donation end of it, or logistically, you know, they want to ship stuff. Is there a particular best site, or explain that?
Well, there's mmrchaiti.org. That's our website, but we work very closely with Haiti Medical Aid Project with a lot of the logistics and the shipping. So there's a link to Haiti Medical Aid Project. There's also contact information for Paul or Danny McAtee. If you have supplies you want to donate, if you want to donate transportation or anything like that, the contact information is all there. And, I mean, that's the one thing about social media is bringing it all together, it all links together, and whatever way a donor or an interested party wants to contact you, that they can.
Okay. Well, you know what? This is a Disaster Recovery Hour. Do a little promo here. Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Every Tuesday, between 1 and 2. And a buddy of mine that I went to the academy with not too long ago from Texas, I will say, hey, Mikey Five Fingers, how are you? I thought I'd need to get that out there. Paul, we do have another question from Claire. She said, how is the orphanages doing, and what areas of recovery seem to be improving the most in Haiti?
Well, the kids seem to be all doing well. It's constant thing to keep food going into the orphanages, keep them supplied with that. As far as their health and everything, are, though, we have a few people go down from time to time, and they do checkups there. Nurse Brown, she was down there just a couple weeks ago. She went in with MRE, which is a group TJ Pitt has down there that does, like, health education, hygiene, stuff like that. They have groups that go in also and assess, make sure the kids are all healthy, get dewormed, scabies. You know, they do checkups to make sure they don't have scabies, all the common things you run into. But they all seem to be doing very well, and you know, they're showing signs like gaining weight. They took their heights down, and you know, started documenting all that to see how they do over, you know, next couple weeks, next couple weeks.
You know, with the collar break, which was kind of scary considering the first time I met you, and we were talking before you even hit the news. You're the one who got the that page, or that page. That's a 1980s phrase. Before you get that text, that 1,100 people were infected. I get, you know, a lot of Americans don't understand. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm casting aspersions there. But you ask somebody what cholera is, and they just think it's this death sentence. And it's really not. It's quite quite simple thing to remedy. It's just that if you don't have the basics, you can't make it happen. So that's why these people just dehydrate and die on you. So I guess one of those things that Claire is asking is, what's the improvement part of it? I guess is the cholera under control at this point?
I believe they're calling for it to be almost a seasonal thing.
Okay.
As far as cholera, we have water purification systems. One's getting ready to go into country. I believe we're going to hook that up at the orphanage in Kinskoff Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solar power with the option to run off gas. It, you know, eliminates any kind of bacteria, stuff like that, and the water cleans it and pumps out 1,000 gallons a day, and that was donated through Garden Fresh Salsa.
Wow, that's huge. That's Jack again, right?
Yes. That was great. And that really does, you know, go a long way. That's one of the biggest things with clean water. Over at Val's Orphanage, they have a water purification system hooked up there also, and it seems to have been doing a real good job.
Well,
but that's what one of the things we can do to battle, you know, cholera in the orphanages. Also, teach them how to keep clean, wash their hands, you know, what to do as far as if they did get sick.
Right.
How they could start fighting it.
Again, the basic things that us as Americans, we do on a daily basis, hence we don't have cholera outbreaks. Let's we're going to go to station break. Guys, stay with me. We'll go to a station break, and we'll be right back. All right,
after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Welcome back. Again, it's the Disaster Recovery Hour. This is our inaugural show, if you will, our first of many, at 2 o'clock every week between 1 and 2. I still have on the line, I have LP / Paul Wagner, and I have Nancy Murdoch, the guru. And so with that said, guys, let's give out some intel on how we could, the folks again, more intel, and how they could help in any way possible. Guys.
You want me to take a call?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
He's the man in the field, Nancy. You run the show.
It's mmrchaiti.org. And then on Facebook, facebook.com/mmrchaiti. And then on Twitter, at mmrchaiti. So we're pretty consistent. And you can reach out to us. You can ask questions, comments on the blog, donations, or if you want to go down and volunteer one day, anything you can do to help with the children or carry boxes or whatever. You know, it's not just medical people. Everybody can be helpful down there.
All right, Paul. I do have a question from Harold. There is a lot of talk about U.S. aid money not getting to the people who need it in Haiti. We do hear that. It's actually there's a ton of money that just got released for Katrina. You know, when you're dealing with tons of money. With that, is there any examples you have that you've seen with that? Or I mean, I know your money is your money, but what about the other money? What do you think?
I don't keep up with it. That's more.
Yeah, exactly.
I try to steer clear of that. I don't know what they're doing with their money.
100% of the money donated to MMRC Haiti goes straight to the work and the orphanages. And you know, our largest expense is gas and vehicle maintenance. So, Paul is paid. He works on the side in construction when he's stateside. All the money that goes to MMRC Haiti goes directly to the orphanages and to help the people in Haiti.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing about not having red tape. Dollars disappearing, if you will. And again, I'm not saying that's what happens. I'm just, it's a an impression that people would get. But guys, thanks for coming on. It's the first show, and Nancy and Paul have been long friends of mine at this point. It's almost like dog years. You know, it's only been what, 6-7 months, but it's we talk more often than that. And so, guys, I appreciate it. And we'll do a follow up in about a month. Nance, I'll see you in the world of the internet with the Twitters and the whatnots. So you and Bill, and Paul. Good luck, bro, and I'll probably talk to you soon because I want to talk about that the Japanese thing, not the Japanese thing, minimizing it, but some of the guys that you worked with over there now are over in Japan. So, guys, yeah. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Be safe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chris. Congratulations on the new station.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. So, just so you know, I've known them for a while, and the Twitter thing is really it's very beneficial. It's helped people like the Haiti earthquake and now with the Japanese, and you know, even with Australia. You know, what came from Twitter was I met a buddy of mine who's now a buddy of mine, I should say, a guy named Geasley. He's from the Norwegian area, if you will. And he is on a World Council of Disaster Preparedness. I mean, this guy is way up there in the food chain. And he deals with the Homeland Security over here, and he deals with the European people. And they have these things in place, these protocols and these scopes, and it's mind-boggling. He is constantly away from his family, unfortunately, but he's doing the Lord's work, really. And That was. I'm glad I haven't talked to Paul live for a while. We kept on Twittering and seeing what he was up to. You know, kind of minimizing the communication. So that's kind of a taste of on the international side of what this show is going to do in the future. This Twitter world and Facebook world has let me into, and I've gotten into other areas that I'm interested in and I didn't know that I had interest for before. And but like I said, that was more the international. Now listen, there's plenty of stuff here right at home that we got that we can talk about. We have issues and things that I can help you out with. What's good about going with using your computer is I have numerous other people around the country right now listening. I was actually at a disaster academy last month or a month and a half ago for 3 weeks and met some great guys who were in my business and. Really, really, really cool guys with different takes on different parts of the country. Some guys were down there in the deep south from Mississippi, and you know they were firsthand. Their homes got crushed. You know they're in this business, and their homes were no longer after a day of Katrina coming into town and having her way with the lay of the land. To hear their stories, that was pretty cool to get that firsthand stuff. I mean, you know, 9/11 was a man-made problem, and so it takes on a different kind of light, you know. And then I got some guys in California. I got, like I said, I got the buddy down in Abilene, Texas, Mikey Fies, as we tagged him over there in the academy. But let's get back. Let me be a little more serious. It's a serious show here. We have a lot of things to talk about here, and I want to talk about what happened. I'm going to touch in the first segment next week. I want to talk about your insurance problems that you have regarding this past week, 2 weeks ago with the flooding. I had the same clients as I had last year, and some of them didn't do what I asked them to do. And you know what? You got to take a look at your insurance policies. You got to call your broker. Listen, you're giving them money. He or she, you're giving them premiums. They'd be more than happy to educate you and say, listen, you might need this, you might need that, but is it their job to come after you? In some circles, it is. But you know, we all know that we get busy and we don't think about insurance unless it's right and smack in our face. That's what we do in this country. At least in my world, I do. You know, it's more like crisis management. But preparing, you know, there's always that one guy in the neighborhood that, you know, he's got this and he's got that. The guy's always prepared, right? You know what? 5 minutes. And I've talked about this to other people when I go to their houses when they have fires or they've had floods or trees or cars have gone through their house, whatever. You know, and I'm not there. I'm in there in the consoling manner. I'm in, you know, trying to inform them this is what you might want to do, because you know what? You watch the news and something bad happens. You know, someone dies in the neighborhood. It's like, well, it's a quiet neighborhood. It never happens here. You know what? How many times do you hear that? If it chalked up to everybody, it happens everywhere, and it does happen everywhere. So the show is, you know, it's for me. It's about being prepared. Like I said, you meet me personally, don't meet me professionally, because. When a little disasters, you know, little flood in your basement, or your upstairs bathroom, you know, for one person, that's nothing. They go to work, they come home, they shop vac it, they're done. Another person, it's a tragedy, you know, because that water came down through the ceiling and it affected, you know, your grandmother's china, and, you know, it's a whole other ball game. So, you know, I don't minimize, people's tragedies, or Russian tragedies, are their disasters. Their disasters are theirs, you know, so they take, it's theirs. So, you know, why address it in that individual manner? So with that, you know, we've got a few minutes left in the show. If you want to contact me, or, you know, God forbid you have to use my services, I am the owner of CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, and the numbers are 201-483-8953. And we also have a New York City number because I do a lot of work in the city. And it's 212-920-8798. And there's the email address is C Plunkett. C is for my first name, Chris. And then you got cppems.com. And then also the website is cppems.com. So you have C Plunkett at cppems.com. I'm like Art Linkletter right now, aren't I? cppems.com is the website. So it was a good first show. Use the comments page. Love to talk to you. You know, with the Twitter or with the Facebook, or you know, Bill can see this stuff live, and I can address it right away. And definitely talk about insurance. Just, you know, again, take a look at those policies. You know, I got some people that I'm going to bring on in the future. They sell insurance, but you know what? They're hawking their product, but they're also, you know, most of the people in the industry, they want, you know, everybody has to have insurance, so you're going to pay your premiums, but they really don't want to see you have a disaster. They don't want to see you have a loss. It's what we call in the business a loss. And you're always, things are just going to happen. If you don't check your dryer vents, you don't change out your smoke detectors, you know, the smoke detector thing is a real simple thing. Every time you change the clocks, spring ahead, fall back, whatever you want to do, check the batteries. I mean, we still, you know, in our neck of the woods, this metropolitan area, there's a lot of older homes that are not hardwired for smoke detectors or CO detectors. CO detectors, a buddy of mine, Captain Dan, got called out the other night for a CO alarm, you know, and it was up in my neighborhood. So I see three trucks rolling by me. And I'm like, oh my God. But you know what, CO, the silent killer. So take a look at that kind of stuff. We can talk about it. I got all these guys with all these different disciplines in the world of disasters. So we can pretty much cover anything you want to ask me, and I can get the answer right there if I don't know myself. And then you know what, I can contact the guy and I'll get that answer before the end of the show. So let's we'll wrap this puppy up. It was a good show. And again, you want to reach out for me, go to the website and or my email, and you have the phone numbers again, and then you can contact the station. They got all my vitals, if you will. So enjoy the remainder of the week. I'll be heading out of town in a couple of weeks to get a little more training and to give you the advice that you need. All right? Take care of yourself. Goodbye.